The beginning, we need to set the correct motivation, and then we think that for the sake of all mother sentient being, so we need to swiftly attain the state of Buddhahood, and because of this, we are here to receive and practice Lama Chopa, the manner of practicing Lama Chopa. In addition to that, through the practice of Lama Chopa, is to benefit all sentient beings, and so that we can attain the state of Buddhahood, and we need to give us a bodhicitta to as this the motivation. Motivation to listen to the teachings on Lama Chopa. I press pause or press. So with regard to Lama Chopa, actually it is a Guru Yoga practice. Although it's a Guru Yoga practice, it includes the Lambim Chemo, and then the lamb of the path to enlightenment by Atisha, it consists of all these essence. So in order to accumulate merit from the very beginning, we need to actually to accumulate merit, we talk about the seven limb puja practice, and also includes the six perfection, and also include how to exchange ourselves with others to generate bodhicitta, as well as the seven cause and effect giving rise to bodhicitta practices, and also the practice of giving and of receiving and taking. Also there includes renunciation, bodhicitta, and then as well as sense of emptiness. It also includes generation stage, completion stage, as well as for at the time of death, how to, through the power practice, transference of consciousness, we can carry this out. And then people who practice Lama Chopa should actually could be a yogi, a petitioner or generation stage, could be a petitioner or completion stage. If it's just a sentient being, also at the time of death, during Pova, they can also use this to liberate themselves. Now, with regard to Lama Chopa, actually, it's a very expensive, very wide, it includes almost everything, all the essence of Buddhahood, of the Buddhist path, that is, whether it's Sutrayana or Tantrayana petitioner, this Lama Chopa is extremely clear. It offers queen essential instructions. Instructions of all the sutra and the tantra are all included in this text. Now, for a preliminary practitioner, if you wish to practice Lama Chopa, you must first take initiation, especially the four empowerments of a high yoga tantra class. And with regard to practicing Lama Chopa, for the very beginning, the Guru Yoga practice, and all the way down to the seven limb prayer, especially with regard to purifying the negativities and the offering of mandala to that portion. So if we can actually practice properly like this, then in Lama Chopa, everything will become the cause for the still Buddhahood, and then and it becomes the queen essence of all, queen essential practice of the Dharma path. And the Lambim Chemo is an excellent text, it's an excellent guide, but the content is actually very wide. And but in Lama Chopa, and all the Lambim teachings in a most succinct manner is being phrased and expressed in it, and it's much practical and easier for the practitioner, and also how to make requests to the Guru, how to think of the contemplate the teacher's quality, and to recognize the teacher's quality, and then how to have aspiration, application, bodhicitta, and after having bodhicitta, how to practice the six perfections. And then what we're going to see today is after having bodhicitta, how to actually apply it. And then first of all, we have to do the first thing we talk about here is the perfection generosity. Mentioned about the aspiring application bodhicitta, especially at the portion of having receiving the bodhisattva vows. Is this sufficient to attain Buddhahood? Of course, it is not sufficient, because after having given rise to bodhicitta, we must also learn how to engage in all the countless practices of a son of a Buddha or a bodhisattva. And because of these two accumulation, we need to do the six perfections. Now, about the Prajnaparamita section, now there are two forms of Prajnaparamita, the common Prajnaparamita as well as the uncommon Prajnaparamita. With regard to the common Prajnaparamita, what it talks about is the six perfections practices. All of you should understand that in regard to the six perfection, what it means is the generosity, morality, patience, perseverance, meditation, wisdom. This is the common partial perfections, and the tantra, uncommon perfection, in regard to the generation as well as the completion stage. First of all, what we need to introduce is that of the common perfection, the six perfections. With regard to the perfection section, first, what we need to introduce is that of the generosity perfection. But first of all, what is perfection? Perfection means to reach the other end, to traverse to the other end. And with regard to perfection, now there are actually three meanings or explanation. In the past, according to the Nyingma explanation, the Paramita, there are four types of way of spinning. In the Gilic path we are spinning, it actually categorized it into three sections. And when we get to reaching the other, what it means is that it means to reach to the other end of the ocean. It means to really transverse to the other side of the ocean. Now we got in the Tibetan Chimpa. It means to reach to the end of samsara, to travel out of samsara, or to traverse to the end of samsara. So therefore, in regard to perfection, now it means to travel to the other end of the to the other shore. Now with regard to the truth of the Buddha's teaching, now it means fruition, the fruition of the path. With regard to sentient being, because sentient being practicing on the path, because of the practice of the Prajnaparamita, they can attain the Buddhahood, they can reach the shore, the end, the stage of Buddhahood. So therefore, they are known as the path Prajnaparamita. But with regard to the Buddha's Prajnaparamita Sutra, they're long, they're middle, and they're short. Now, what it means is that in terms of sutra, and this is known as the Sutra Prajnaparamita. Now, this the Gelugpa explanation of the three of the Gelugpa three explanation on what is the meaning of perfections. Now, with regard to why they call the fruition part perfection, because through this perfection, we can stitch the stage of Buddhahood. Therefore, we call the fruition perfection, the fruition perfection, now, the fruition paramita. So, because through it, we can attain the state about Buddhahood, so we call it the fruition paramita. So later, what we call it, the path perfection, because to state the Buddhahood, we need to practice along the Bodhisattva path. To practice along Bodhisattva path, what it means is generosity, the six perfection, and all the countless practices of a Bodhisattva, which means that before we reach the destination, we need to walk on the path before we can reach where we are going for. So the state of Buddhahood, now therefore the Bodhisattva, this perfection is also known as the path perfection. Now, why? With regard to the Prajna as well as the Tripitaka are known as the Sutra perfection, because when we are walking on the path, we need a map, we need a compass. So, therefore, what it means that the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha's words, the Sutra, the Tripitaka, that in the Tripitaka, what is generosity, what is morality, what is patience, etc. So, it means it's a geography, it is a compass, it is a map. So therefore, the Sutra, the Tripitaka itself, they are also known as the Sutra Perfection or the Sutra Paramita. Now, this is in Gelugpa, this is what they meant by the three kinds of paramita. Now, in the Nyingma tradition, they meant a fourth kind of perfect paramita, which means is that of the self-nature perfection. Now, what is meant by self-nature perfection? Now, what it means is that on the path of the practice, the most ultimate is that of the wisdom of emptiness. So because of the goddess of emptiness or the mother of emptiness, all the Buddhas are born. So therefore, the Nyingma actually added a fourth, which is called that of the self-nature or emptiness perfection or emptiness paramita or self-nature paramita. Now today, we talk about paramita, what it means is sutra paramita. So first of all, we need to introduce generosity. Now in the sutra, now it actually means that what generosity refers to, being able to offer, being able to give. Now with regard to giving dharma or giving material offerings or giving fearlessness, we got the generosity. What it means is from the depths of our heart, we actually give, we actually be our generosity, we are actually to give. Now, with regard to generosity, what is antidote towards this? Antidotes towards our greed and attachment in our heart. Now, when giving or being generous, they give food, but then they give food which is inedible, and this is known as an impure offering. And but if you, in short, there is something known as pure or impure giving. Now, if the motivation is flawed, what you give, or the object that is being offered is a flaw, then this is not the correct form of generosity. But the motivation is good, the things that's offered is proper, then it's known as an authentic, pure offering. Now, what we are talking about here is to give rise to bodhicitta, whether it's aspiring bodhicitta, to be the foundation for the subsequent perfection. Now, generosity, there are three kinds. First is material generosity, giving land, giving drinkable water, giving place of where we stay, giving clothes, giving what the food, giving drink. All these are collectively known as the material offering, or the generosity with regard to material offering. Now, at the beginning, why is the first one known as material offering generosity? Because before that, why we give generosity? Because we give us the bodhicitta, and bodhicitta is for the sake of attaining state of Buddhahood, and because of this, we diligently exert to benefit all beings with regard to sentient beings, and what can directly benefit them is material, so material objects. So first of all, we talk about the generosity of the material. Now, in the Guide to Bodhisattva Way of Life, is mentioned that after having given rise to bodhicitta, now it's equivalent to having planted a seed to benefit all beings, and it's a vow. So, but if you want to benefit sentient beings, we do not engage in the sixth perfection. Isn't that the line to all sentient beings? So, therefore, doing generosity as well as the other perfections is to benefit all sentient beings. So, in order to benefit all sentient beings, we give all kinds of activity from our body, speech, and mind. All these things, because the benefit being, we enact all sorts of activities from our body, speech, and mind. Regard to material generosity, some people offer their own body, some offer their daily use necessities. And then, if those people can offer their body, now this is only the very highly accomplished bodhisattva can do that. It's got to bodhisattva on the level of the stages of attainment, but for sentient being, this is not to be recommended, because sentient being offer their body, they feel pain. When they feel pain, then they give rise to attachment or attachment, and this is bad. So therefore, when giving of body, now it refers to bodhisattva who are on the levels and stages of attainment. Now, when giving, being generous with regard to our body or giving of things that we own, now we need to use our wisdom to see whether if this is necessary. Now, in the Chandrakirti, in the entry to the middle way, it very clearly stated that when practicing generosity, we need to see whether if it is necessary. Now, if it is not necessary, it is also known as an impure form of generosity. Now, moreover, it is also mentioned that when giving generosity, we need to think that everything that we are offering ourselves, etc., and then ourselves, the offering, the person to receive, are independently or are dependent each other, and so are inherently empty. So, therefore, when giving generosity, we are able to do it through the principles of wisdom. So then, the merit of offering will not be lost, and will become a powerful cause for the state of Buddhahood. Now, similarly, when giving doing generosity, we need to do it in a respectful attitude. It cannot just be a careless dispensing of generosity offering. Now, for example, in the sutra they say, to be respectful, we offer with the right hand, because in the Indian tradition, the left hand is dirty. So it's a form of a despised attitude. So we keep an offer. We need to give in a very respectful manner, and not to throw it to the recipient. And we offer a respectful, devoted attitude. It will cause the merit to be very great. Especially the Indian tradition. Now, what it means is that not just to give with the right hand, we must say that we need to place it on our head first before offering to the others. Now, this is a very respectful way of offering, and then the merit subsequently which ensues is definitely very, even much more great and better. Now, in the past, in India, is actually recorded in the Sariputra's biography, when Sariputra actually gave us a bodhicitta to want to engage in the Mahayana bodhisattva path. Now, one day, a heretic came here to ask for Sariputra's right hand, and Sariputra cut off his right hand to give to the heretic. But when he giving the right hand, because he offered the right hand to the heretic with the left hand, heretic said, "Oh, you are not respectful to me." So he doesn't accept the right hand, they accept the offering of the right hand, and even kick Sariputra. And then Sariputra think, "Oh, it's so difficult to benefit beings, then benefit just one person. What more to benefit all sentient beings? So let's forget about bodhicitta." And so he gave up Mahayana and entered the Hinayana path. So because Sariputra did not put the cut off right hand on top of his head before giving to the heretic, so you can say this is a kind of fault or a flaw with regard to Sariputra's offering. So what is introduced here is with regard to the material offering, which is a material offering of the body. So the next one we are talking about here is the offering of the enjoyment, or offering of the necessity, or land, water, drinking water, food, clothing, etc. All these are material offerings, a material offering of necessity, material offering of enjoyment, and offering the recipient can be divided to sentient beings or the enlightened objects. When offering to triple gem, what it means is to offer the triple gem. It means that when offering the triple gem, we offer to our best ability, the best wealth, the best material object. So to offer triple gem. Now this is an antidote against our attachment, our abstinence. So if we are not able to give a numerous and great offering, we can simply offer less. So that's also possible, and it's also good. What is most important is the pure motivation of giving. Otherwise, it becomes an impure offering. So similarly too, when giving to sentient being is the same. Now, with regard to the recipient of our offering, it can be that of the five senses, the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the touch, and these are the corresponding five aggregates too, which means that when you offer form, such as flowers, the recipient is that of the eye sense and of the sense of the of sight. So because we are offering a very beautiful offering, now it will consequence in a very beautiful, wonderful form. Looks in the future. When offering music, now it's good. It is to the eye. Whether what kind of instrument it is, can be drum, it can be all these kind of instruments, cymbals, etc. All this beautiful sound is an offering to the ear sense, and in the future it will result in obtaining a very beautiful voice, and also can be a cause for the state of Buddhahood if it is motivated by the bodhicitta. So with regard to the beautiful sound and beautiful sound, now it can be offering to the nose. Sense of the nose, so it can allow us to be pure and to be keeping the pure commitment in regard to the offering of food. Now, it can be one marvelous food. It can be kind sweets, three sweets, three whites. It can allow us to obtain lovely food, wonderful food in the past. And if we give us the bodhicitta and by making this offering, can be a cause of Buddhahood as well. Now, in the past, or the lineage master, they all say that when offering water is best, because why? Because in India it's very hot, and people on the travelers on the road will feel the heat, and because of that they suffer considerably. So because of the heat, there are many dust as well. So when we're offering water, how to do it? By sprinkling water onto the pathways to allow the dust to settle on the ground and not to swirl about, and then offering water to the travelers so that they will not feel thirsty or hot or dry. So with regard to water, we do not have a kind of stingy attitude towards it, and in fact it can actually benefit many beings and can actually help to dispel the suffering of their body and mind. So because we are not greedy about water, so there is no fault with regard to the motivation as well. Now the fifth type of offering is that of the touch. Now the recipient is that of the sense of touch, and this refers to the clothing or our feet, and we're offering clothing which are soft, which are light, and smooth. Therefore, in the future, we result in smooth skin and not rough skin. Especially in the future, with the Buddhahood, we will be able to emit the morality, the lovely sense of morality. Therefore we see that there are many forms of offering giving by others. When they give offering to the Buddha, they offer ropes to the Buddha statues. Now if the Buddha statue, the material offered is very good, so that it will be a very good cause. But in the future, if the material, the material is no good, then it will, because the motivation is pure, you also bring a lot of faults. When giving generosity, now it is divided to material offering, Dharma offering, as well as offering of fearlessness. When offering the material offering, offering on daily enjoyment necessity objects is a material offering. When organizing program for the master or the master teaching, or when the teacher is teaching in school and is teaching giving knowledge and with good motivation teaching these, and these are also known as the offering of the Dharma. So now especially when teaching to abandon the 10 of virtues and to adopt the 10 virtues, this is definitely generosity offering. Or with regard to the Dharma. So, with regard to generosity or fearlessness, it's also divided into two types, the gross and the subtle generosity or fearlessness. A gross form of it means to releasing live birds, fishes, all kinds of animals. When animals have danger, we give them life so that they can be free from danger to protect their lives. So this means the generosity or fearlessness. And this, with regard to the gross form of generosity or fearlessness. Why is that so? Because to protect their lives, we release them from danger. So this is known as generosity or fearlessness. Now, in the God Bodhisattva way of life, it is mentioned that when doing generosity and we ourselves giving generosity, the recipient, the object of offering themselves should have emptiness as a backdrop, as underlying principle. Now, with regard to the detail, if we do not able to have a masterful grasping and all the subtle points of emptiness, we just need to think that inherently it is of the nature of emptiness, and this then is known as the subtle form. If we have the emptiness as underlying principle, this is known as the subtle aspect of the generosity or fearlessness. Now, in regard to the God Bodhisattva way of life, it's also mentioned that a drop of water, a drop into the ocean, will become infinite and endless just as the ocean itself. Now, before the ocean dry up, we can't say drop of water, droplet of water is also dry up. So therefore, if we use emptiness as a principle when giving generosity and dedicate for the attainment of Buddhahood, now and before we attain the state of Buddhahood, all the merit that we do, all the merit accumulate and dedicate for Buddhahood, until we attain the Buddha, attain the state of Buddhahood, all these dedicated merit will never be exhausted. Now, in the God Bodhisattva way of life, is mentioned that even if today we just offer a glass of water, now this glass of water in our heart, what we have in mind is that in order to dispel all the thirst of all sentient beings, so I offer this cup of water and dedicate like that, the merit that ensue is infinite as the number of sentient beings that we keep in our mind. So this is in line with the Bodhisattva's practice, and we'll be able to benefit all sentient beings, can also benefit ourselves. Now, when giving a daily material offering of many kind, or simply just a mere glass of water, if we are thinking, what we are thinking of is that we want to benefit one being, 100 beings from these, and then the merit that ensue will be merit from offering 100 beings. But if we think we offer this to benefit only one person, then the merit will be only with regard to one person. But if our mind is set in order to benefit all sentient beings, and then the merit that comes will be as great as infinite number of sentient beings. Why is the Bodhisattva's power is so huge, and then the merit accumulated by sentient beings is small? That's because the difference lies in the motivation. Now, with regard to generosity or material enjoyment, offering of a place of residence, offering of sound, offering of a smell, offering of clothing, outfit, etc., then all these things will belong to the material generosity. Now, especially with regard to all sorts of visualized offerings, and this also belongs to material offering, and then can also ensue in a very great merit. And now, when to in order to give sentient being fear, freedom from fear, this is known as fearlessness, generosity. And so we must understand that all kinds of positive karmas with negative must be dedicated for the highest state of Buddhahood, and only then will the merit not be destroyed by any other negative factors. So with regard to offering of Dharma, it means that to teach the Dharma with pure motivation, especially with giving, say, with no thought of no thought of wanting to obtain fame, no thought of wanting to obtain any hidden agenda, no wrong motivation. You give the Dharma, this and this will be the best form of Dharma generosity. And the root verses of Dhammacakkappavattana, now it is the root verses are from what he means, the root verses here, giving everything, the material enjoyment, giving all kinds of merit, giving all kinds of well-being and quality to all beings so that we can benefit all sentient beings' wishes, such that the person who want well will get well, those who want Dharma will get Dharma, and such that to benefit all sentient beings' wishes, and such that all sentient beings will be free from greed, from attachment, from stinginess, and such that the mind of giving can increase forevermore to be and for so that I can perfect the generosity perfection. May the Guru give me the blessing to be able to do this. So the next one we talk about is the generosity or morality. This moment you must think or visualize that Guru and Idam, and then and think for the motivation and for the benefit of all sentient beings to attain the state of Buddhahood. And then we must keep the vows correctly, properly. So we must know how to keep and abide by the vows and commitments properly. What is meant by keeping commitment and vows? It means to be able to abide, to be able to safeguard, or able to keep them, to uphold. With regard to vows or commitment, it can be divided to three main types, and three main types are to benefit against harm, and then to benefit all beings, and then to cultivate all the Dharma, to cultivate all the Dharmic qualities. These are the three kinds of commitments we need to keep. So in order to uphold the vows, what it means is that we will not want to create all the negative activities, and this means to keep the vows. And and with regard to the preliminary petition, this is most important for him. And with regard to stop the 10 of virtuous action, the Patimoksha vow, Bodhisattva vow, the Tantric vows. What do we call it? The self-liberation or Patimoksha vow. It means that the individual liberation, by keeping the vows properly, it can allow us to gain liberation. So it means individual liberation, and to means to be liberated from samsara. Now, if today we are not keeping the Patimoksha vows and not having kept the Bodhisattva vows, it can also allow us, we can also try to do the commitment of stopping the 10 non-virtuous actions. Now, Pratimoksha vow, what it means, it means that to stop killing, to stop stealing, to stop sexual misconduct, and also it means to stop harsh speech, divisive speech, meaningless speech, untrue speech, and these all these aspects and the like refer to the precepts of the self-liberation or Pratimoksha vows. Now, with regard to harming others or greed, attachment, wrong views, these types, and they are not what taught by the Buddha. These are not all precepts taught by the Buddha, because sentient beings are not able to control the mind of others. So the Buddha did not say, he did not begin by saying you have to stop these negative traits of the mind. Now, if today we are full of anger or hatred, even when the person is walking, also he will also be moving in an angry way, and even when he's eating, he'll be angry. Now the Buddha did not dictate that Shenshimin got to stop anger right now or what. So therefore, at the beginning, the Buddha, out of the 10 non-virtuous actions, at the beginning, the Buddha only prescribed 7 forms of non-virtuous actions. Now, with regard to your celebration of Padimoshava, it's also divided into 8 types of the, or the 8 races, races of Padimoshava. The first type is that of the keeping the 8 precepts first. Second type is to, is that of the layman's vow, and layman vow divided into the Upasaka or the Upasika, layman or laywoman, and so we have 3, and then later on we have that of the Shamanera or Shamanerika, that of the novice monk or the novice nun, and 5, so there are 5, and then later on then of the fully ordained monk or the fully ordained nun, so altogether is 8. Now, what is meant by Pratimoksha or celebration vow? It means that when you are practicing properly, you gain liberation for yourself. So therefore, it's not a celebration. Now, Bodhisattva vow, there are 14 roots. And then there are and 46 branch vows. In regard to tantric vows, there are 18 kinds of root vows, and then 40 kinds of branch vows. So this is regard to the Bodhisattva or the tantric vows, and these are the content with regard to these kinds of vows here. Now the Lama Chupa root verses. Now it is if you got as a verse 102, receive blessing, complete perfection of moral discipline or the way to even at the cost of our life. What it means that even the Pratimoksha, Bodhisattva, even tantric vows, all that has been taught or what we should not transgress against, even at the cost of life, all these we hope that we will not transgress them, especially with the 3 kinds of vows, Pratimoksha, Bodhisattva, and the tantric vow. All these vows we should be able to perfect, to learn, to understand, to practice them, and we seek the Guru blessing to be able to accomplish all of these. And the third perfection is that of the patience or perfection. In regard to patience, now what it means is that to sentient beings not to be angry, not to harm. So that this is what is meant by being patient. Now, in the 6 perfections, to the preliminary practitioner, patience is very important and it can also bring very great benefits. Now, if we don't practice patience, what kind of disadvantages or downfall will it bring about? It means that all the merit accumulated from beginningless time, as a result of not keeping patience, will give us the anger. Even an instant of anger itself can actually destroy all the accumulated virtues of merit in an instant, to destroy all of them. And so, and this is most terrifying, of course, horrifying matter. So therefore, it's very important we practice patience. All the wealth we so painstakingly accumulate and which kept in the warehouse, but then a thief came and simply removed all this wealth, all these precious items, and such that we are not able to enjoy these accumulated things. So similarly, all the merit virtue accumulated from beginningless time, but then is stolen away by thieves, so we are not able to enjoy any of these. So we have to be very careful, to be wary, to be attentive, to be alert against this thief by being patient. So we have to contemplate the disadvantages of not being patient, and when we really think about it with great diligence, then we will give rise to the thought of wanting to be patient. We must understand that in the past, all the accumulated virtue and merit is destroyed by a thief of anger, such that we will not be able to enjoy all these merit and virtue. too, but if we are patient, which means that we are able to keep all this merit and virtue in a place which is away from harm. So we got to be free from anger, which means dedicate all these virtue and merit for the attainment of Buddhahood, or we can, with all this merit and virtue, we actually contemplate them, accumulate them with emptiness as a principle. And if this is the case, then anger will not be able to destroy all this painstakingly accumulated virtue or merit. Otherwise, we will not be able to enjoy this so-called enjoy or partake of these merits and virtues. Now, with regard to being patient, first of all, we have to think carefully what are the advantages of being patient, what are the disadvantages of not being patient. We need to contemplate very carefully, the advantages and disadvantages. But if we don't contemplate properly, then we will not be able to practice patience properly, and then we'll be the ones to suffer. We must also understand all the bodhisattvas, because they understand the advantages of patience. So therefore, on the path, they keep on progress and progress on the path. But for sentient beings, because they did not contemplate on the advantages of patience, so they give us anger, and as a result, they destroy all the painstakingly accumulated merit and virtue. So this is a big disadvantage of being impatient or not keeping patient. But bodhisattva, knowing the advantages of being patient, and so is able to ascend and becoming better, refine the dharma practice. But ascension being do not know the advantages or to know the disadvantages, even therefore they are not able to progress further on the path. If patients also themselves can be divided to three categories. First is that of the patient towards suffering. Second, to be patient towards harm. And the third is to be patient towards dharma. So the first type is with regard to patience towards harm, which means that when others harm ourselves, we ourselves are able to be patient to it. We don't give reciprocal attack, we don't give retaliation, and when people harm us, we must think that we experience all this suffering or harm because we have harmed them in the past. So therefore, this is brought about by the bad karma from the past. Once I experience this harm, the karma is purified, and then the karmic debt is repaid. So therefore, I do not retaliate against this person, and this is that is known as the patient towards harm. Example, if people ask you to take the defecated material, you tell them to eat the same, people throw a stone at you, you throw a stone back, so then this will be the continued creation of sufferings. Got to being patient. The Kadampa tradition, there's this story which is that Kadampa Geshe Sharawa, the one he saw someone sitting under a tree meditating, and then he's very curious and asked, can I know what you are doing? And then the person said, well, I'm practicing patience. And Geshe Sharawa said, want to test whether he's really practicing, so he went to him and said, why don't you eat defecated material? And this person jump up and say, oh, why don't you eat that instead yourself? So then Geshe Sharawa said, oh, so this is the result, or this is the scope of the depth of the practice of patience. So therefore, a person who truly practices patience will not immediately retaliate verbally or others. They will contemplate carefully before offering anything in return to the other party. Now, the second kind of patient is to be patient towards suffering in general. Now, what it means is that during Dharma practice, you are able to be patient towards all kinds of suffering in Dharma practice. For example, you say, I feel cold, I feel hunger, so I will not practice. And so this is meant by patient towards suffering in general with regard to Dharma practice. The third kind of suffering means means patience. Means I will start Dhamma practice because I'm tired. I stop because Dhamma practice because I'm hungry, because I'm cold. This person will be persevering on the Dhamma practice, and this is a true Dhamma practitioner. And this kind of patience means the patience of being able to partake of suffering, patience of the partaking of suffering. Now the third kind is that of the patience towards ultimate truth, be it mandala offering, be it making prostration, be it any kinds of good deeds that we do from our hearts. We think that we do it in order to subdue the defilement, in order to subdue self-grasping, self-cherishing, so we're able to diligently exert effort, etc. So this is the best kind of patience. That's the patience towards Dharma practice. So in the past, Lopanayadeva, this great master, he actually recounted how he's able to bear this patient, because he said when he experiences suffering from the four elements or harm from human or non-human, he contemplate why do harm, harm me. They harm me because not because of themselves, but because of their defilements, the anger within themselves. So therefore, because they were dictated, they were under control of the defilements or under control of the anger, so I can't blame them. The real enemy is the anger, especially with regard to defilements within themselves. So therefore, in order to get rid of defilement, get rid of anger, so I want to participate to get rid of this real enemy that's within myself. This is the truth, is a fact that someone who is angry is like a mad person, because he will use all kinds of irrational, enact all kinds of irrational acts, and is very pitiful because it's someone who is chronically mentally ill. Will you be angry towards someone who is mentally unstable? Because we wouldn't, because this person is not in control of himself. So when sentient beings are angry, that's because they are not being rational. They are controlled by defilements. Being will not be angry for no reason. A person may be angry only because of defilements within themselves. So the real enemy is the defilements. Now, just like in the past, the Buddha under Bodhi tree, when he was about to attain enlightenment, all the Maras and all the Mara actually came to disturb and stop the Buddha and attack the Buddha. All the sword and attacks all to transform into beautiful flowers to down the Buddha. So it's because of the Buddha's practice of having subdued all defilement Mara. So once the defilement Mara have been subdued, the external, there's no anger, and when there's no anger, the external Mara cannot harm the Buddha. So therefore, today we have to contemplate and think why will others harm ourselves. That's because this person's own defilement within themselves. Therefore, we cannot blame this person. If it is anyone we want to blame, is our own internal defilement. And this is all brought about as a result of all the defilement. So if we can think like this, we'll be able to see the downfall of this defilement, and then we'll be able to keep all our merits and virtue intact, and be able to do the Dhamma practice properly. In the past, Jie Tsong Kapa actually composed great praise to Buddha Shakyamuni. It's called Kapsuma. Kapsuma means a praise of the three times, the praise of the three periods. They're praising the Buddha, having attained the highest enlightenment under Bodhi tree. And in the Bodhi tree, the Mara demons, external demons, all numerous uncountable Mara appear with all sorts of weapons, swords and arrow, bow, attack the Buddha. But the Buddha has attained perfect enlightenment, has already subdued his internal Mara, which are defilements such as anger. So Buddha is able to triumph over all this Mara. But because all this Mara have anger in their mind, so they were defeated. So we have to contemplate and think the why is like that. Because if people harm ourselves, we must think that this sentient being is so pitiful, because it's under controlled and dictated by his own defilement, has no freedom. And it's not the sentient being's fault, it's the fault of the defilement of the sentient being. So if we can think like this, then it can help our Dhamma practice, and it can really is the best way for us to practice patience. So what we've introduced here, regard to generosity, commitment, morality, or patience, these are best for the ordinary being like ourselves. For ordinary sentient being, these are beyond them. And this is very much applicable to the lay disciple. And this is what the Buddha taught of the six perfection. These are the first three. And this is something which is within the grasp of the Dhamma practice of lay people. So if beings can keep the vows, can be patient, can be offered generosity, they can accumulate a very, very great expense of merit and virtue. In the Lama Chupa's book verses, it begins from line the first 104, even if we must remain for an ocean of aeons in the fiery hells of Avicii for the sake of one sentient being alone, all the way to be, not to be discouraged. That's verse 104. Now, if all sentient being of the three rhymes are all angry to me, it refers, the three rhyme refer to the desire form and formless rhyme and all the beings within these three rhymes. Even should they all be so angry with us, insult us, towards them we will be patient. The patient we mentioned here, our four type. First is the patient towards the insult of others. We do not retaliate, do not verbally retaliate. And this is the first type. Now the second type is the patient, is when people reveal our faults, reveal our secrets and say, oh, what wrong we've done in the past, we have been a thief in the past, we've done all kinds of bad, negative things in the past. Well, we do not then retaliate by revealing the other person's secret, by revealing the other person's downfall. And this is, we not retaliate by doing so. Now this is the second type of patience. The third kind is when essentially we hit us with a club or with a stone or throw a stone at us, we will not retaliate by physically returning these harms. This is the third kind of patience. The fourth kind is that when others harm our lives or even kill us, we do not retaliate by murdering them in return. And then our relatives and friends are killed by others, we do not want to retaliate by murdering them in return, murdering their friends or relatives, but instead we react with compassion. Now this is the fourth kind of patience. So when others harm us, we do not give rise to anger to them, and we do not retaliate. And this is a real practice of patience, and we must contemplate what advantages this kind of patience will bring to us. When and through all these, we can perfect patience, Pashparamita. And not just we ourselves practice, we pray sincerely to the Guru that we can perfect this patience perfection, that we shall not retaliate other people's insults, we not retaliate again people's revealing our secrets, our downfalls. We not retaliate again people inflicting physical harm on us. We not retaliate the people killing us. We also pray to the Guru to give us a blessing that we can perfect this perfection of patience. So if we are able to differentiate black and white, right or wrong, virtue or non-virtue, we really abide by the karma. Do the triple gem have strong devotion? And this also refers to the patience, the ultimate patience of the towards Dharma. The next we want to talk about is perseverance. Next we're talking about is the fourth perfection of joyful perseverance. What we think about is that in order to benefit all sentient beings swiftly and swiftly, I should want to attain the state of Buddhahood. So therefore, I practice the three kinds of joyful perseverance. So with regard to joyful perseverance, what it means is that with regard to the proper Dharma, we give rise to joy. With regard to Dharma practice, we give rise to joy. It doesn't mean that it means that we are very difficulty. We slog for work, slog for daily life. This is not joyful perseverance. In the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, it is commented that how to attain, how to perfect much merit, it is through joyful perseverance that we're able to do so. So in the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, it's mentioned that whatever can the person who can give rise to great joyful perseverance, these people can gain very, very great, uncountable, infinite virtue merit. And as, but if people have no joyful perseverance, then the merit and virtue they accumulate is very minor, very weak. So in the past in Tibet, there was this great yogi, Drupa Khunle, who has some stories related to him. In the past, Drupa Khunle, in a very far distant, like Buddha Shakyamuni, he's also a disciple of the Buddha Kowaji. Kowaji, a Buddha of the one of the thousand Buddha of the past. He was which is the first Buddha of this fortunate aeon. He's a disciple of this Buddha. So it means at the very beginning, Drupa Khunle, when he arrived at the Jowokan, or the most sacred Buddha Shakyamuni statue in Lhasa, Drupa Khunle told Buddha Shakyamuni, he said, in the past, we are all disciples of the first Buddha of the fortunate aeon. We are both classmates. So at that time, he told Buddha Shakyamuni, what did he say? He said, last time, we are all disciples of the first Buddha of the fortunate aeon, but because you are always so persevering in your Dharma practice, so you are not a Buddha. But because I'm lazy, I'm indolent, so I'm still in samsara. So taking on the account of your great perseverance, I prostrate to you. So therefore, he prostrated to Buddha Shakyamuni, Drupa Khunle, after saying this to the statue of Lord Buddha. So being in samsara countless time in the past, we could have been related to Buddha Shakyamuni, or could even have learned from him before. But now Lord Buddha himself has become our refuge, an object of prostration or refuge. So, and has coming to samsara, enacted so many holy deeds, and we ourselves are still in samsara. So the difference is the difference between ourselves and the Buddha is whether or not we have been persevering. So therefore, similarly, we should all know that because we have not been persevering, so therefore we have not been able to attain Buddhahood. And because of our anger, because of our carelessness, we are still in samsara. So, and now we are so lucky to have retained. There's a one and only chance of having human body, the eight freedoms, and then the tenth, and then the ten capacities. So we need to really be persevering and exert lots of diligent effort to attain Buddhahood. Otherwise, we are still going to stay in samsara. Now, what is the opposite of persevering? It is indolence or laziness. And so, persevering is antidote against laziness, like this great yogi has said, because Buddha Shakyamuni is persevering, so he is sitting Buddhahood. But he himself, because he's lazy, therefore he's samsara. So therefore, we ourselves should definitely give rise to persevering diligence and exert effort in our Dharma practice. And so with regard to diligence, there are three types, and similarly here, indolence also can be divided into three types. So the first type of indolence is means indolence of not correcting evil deeds, which means we are always doing negative actions and not exerting effort in the virtue, but on the other hand, instead we are committing all the negative action. So because of this, we need to exert effort to learn what is meant by pure practice, and then to cut off all this negative action, and then to give rise to a sense of diligence and perseverance. Now the second type is that of a kind of a retrogression. Now even though we want to practice Dharma now, we are not able to sustain this virtuous thought, and then we start Dharma practice sometime later. So now this is the fault of retrogression. So because we are not able to sustain our effort, therefore we are not able to give rise to diligence, and so we need to persevere on to the end, which means even if it means we only do one virtuous deed a day, but gradually day by day we can in the end attain the state of Buddhahood. Otherwise, if we try to only practice for some time and later give up Dhamma practice, everything that we've done in the past will not be of any use. Now the third type, of course, is the kind of indolence, which means that before we do it, we think we don't have the ability to do it. Now this is meant by indolence of laziness, indolence of lack of confidence, which means in the past we must know that Buddha was like ourselves, a sentient being, but the Buddha has now attained complete Buddhahood. Oh, therefore, similarly, we through our Dhamma practice can definitely state the highest state of Buddhahood. We need to give us a kind of very a strong sense, a strength of confidence. So therefore, we need to stop all these kind of three forms of indolence. We need to sustain and be persevering, and moreover, and to enact all kinds of virtuous action to prevent ourselves from falling to the perverted path, to really exert on in the right dharmic path like Buddha Shakyamuni, what Buddha has been able to do in the past. Similarly, we should be able to do so as well. Until one fine day, we can attain the highest state of Buddhahood. So therefore, what kind of persevering it is, it means that towards the proper Dharma, and give us a joyful, the joy, whatever kinds of Dharma, we give us a sense of joy and happiness, like the Buddha, what the Buddha or Bodhisattvas have done in the past. Similarly, we are all beings, we are beings possessing consciousness, so therefore we should be able to do so as well. So we should joyfully engage in Dharma practice, and this is perseverance. With regard to a kind of armor-like perseverance, and this is the next type of perseverance, and which means that the perseverance to always engage in Dharma, and persevering in benefiting, giving joy to beings is the third time. So armor-like is the first, the second, and now the third kind of perseverance. Now, with regard to armor-like perseverance, what it means is that towards antidote towards indolence, meaning I myself can do that as well. That's the armor-like perseverance. Why do we call it armor-like perseverance? Because it's like putting on the armor. Putting on the armor, we have no fear. So now, if you think that other people can do it, so why can't I not do it? So we are all sentient beings. We are all beings with consciousness. So in this sense, we are equal. So if the Buddhas have do it, we can do it. The only difference is that I have not been persevering. So if I'm persevering, even if sentient being, in the end they can attain the highest state of Buddhahood. So we cannot think that in the very beginning we cannot do it, we have no ability, we are weak. We need to stop this kind of lack of confidence. So this is known as armor-like perseverance. And why do you call it armor-like perseverance? Because it's from the example in the world, worldly example, which means that if we are going to the battlefield to protect our body, we need to wear the metallic helmet, metallic breastplate, etc. So to sustain the state of Buddhahood too, we must also wear armor-like perseverance in order to defeat indolence, the enemy of indolence. So therefore, it's known as armor-like perseverance. Now the second type is that of the perseverance to learn our Dharma. We mean we are able to diligently exert in Dharma. This is the second kind of perseverance, the perseverance of always engaging, always exerting effort in the Dharma. So what do we call it? The perseverance of engaging Dharma, because you cut the 10 non-virtuous action, and instead you give rise to the wish, the ability to able to dispel suffering of others, bring benefit and joy to others. So this give rise to kinds of confused indolence. So therefore, giving rise to strength of benefiting others. So this is known as the perseverance of engaging the Dharma. So to benefit all beings, that what it means is that bodhisattvas, because within their minds they are full of bodhicitta, so all kinds of virtue are able to be of benefit to others. So it is not for self benefit, but for the greater good and to the greatest infinite good of others. So therefore, it's known as the this is the third kind called the perseverance of being able to bring benefit and joy to others. Now, regard to more example to be given is that it's like a king being at the head of the army, at the head of all the general, leading them into battle, and because around him there are many general, lieutenants, army, and all. So therefore, the king is not able to be harmed by others, but is able to suppress his enemy. So this is the use of perseverance. Now, bodhisattva is possessed of the full power. So he's able to really be persevering in it, so he's able to protect himself from chaos, from confusion, from indolence, so from carelessness or unmindfulness. So perseverance is an antidote to unmindfulness, and perseverance to indolence, and so forth. So now, if we're able to practice with diligence, and we won't be harmed by indolence, and we'll not be harmed by anger, so we are give rise to selfless wisdom as an antidote towards self-grasping, against self-grasping. So of all the four powers, what are these? The first is the power of faith, and towards our aim, where we have a strong faith, and so we run towards it, and then we give rise to the wish to reach to fulfill the aim, and then to work hard towards it. This is the first power. So the second power is the power of steadfastness. So if we are steadfast, determined in our practice, we don't give up halfway, and until we reach the destination. This is known as the power of determination, or the power of steadfastness. So the third type is that of the perseverance of joy. So because giving us a great joy, then we have we will not be give us the joy, then we will not be defeated by discouragement or so forth. Fourth power is no regret, which means when benefiting sentient being, you do not feel suffering. You will not retrogress. You do not regret. So in doing diligence, we need to have these four powers in our persevering practice. We are able to continue with it. Definitely, there will be signs of accomplishment and signs of realization. So we need to pray to the Guru to give us blessing that we can perfect the perfection of perseverance. Now, the Lama Chupa root verse, it is from verse 104. So even if we must remain for ocean of years in the fiery hills of Vichy for the sake of one sentient being alone, so blessing complete perfection, enjoy his effort to strive compassion for supreme enlightenment and not be discouraged. This verse, what it means is that even though for the sake of one sentient being alone, don't talk about infinite sentient being, if just for merely one sentient being alone, and we ourselves want to and will need to be reborn in hell for infinite aeons and receiving all infinite suffering, but for the sake of this one being alone, I will be very willing to suffer for the sake of this one being. Not just giving rise to great compassion for that all beings will be free from suffering and have happiness, but moreover, we need to be very equanimity to all beings. We must have towards the being of the hell rhyme, animal rhyme, gods rhyme, etc. Towards all these beings, we need to have equanimity, and towards them, we need to give rise to compassion, to equanimity, and to want to attain Buddha for the sake of all these sentient beings, and we receive blessings. We request to receive blessing from the Guru to be able to perfect this paramita of a perseverance.